You've heard of BetaShares. You've probably seen the logo on our podcast. You might even be among their 1 million investors. So you can imagine that I'm delighted to say BetaShares is the official ETF partner of the Australian Finance Podcast. With nearly 100 exchange-traded funds, you can go to betashares.com.au and immerse yourself in ETFs and unique insights covering all of the sectors, themes, core and satellite positions you could want. Think cybersecurity through the HACK ETF, robotics and AI with the RBTZ ETF, and uranium with the URNM ETF. The list goes on. To explore the BetaShares ETF range, visit betashares.com.au, read the relevant PDS and TMD on the website, and consider if the fund is right for you. BetaShares Capital Limited is the issuer.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Hello, I'm Kate Campbell.
And I'm Owen Rask.
And you're listening to the Australian Finance Podcast.
A podcast where we talk about money, finance, investing, and all that good stuff.
We're helping you invest your time and money better one podcast episode at a time.
Yes, so please subscribe if you like the series. And don't forget you can find us on social media. We're on all the platforms. Kate, where can people go?
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Rask Australia. That's R-A-S-K Australia.
Mm-hmm. And I'm Owen Rask on Twitter, or Owen Rask AU on Instagram. Beware the imitators. People like to copy us. Without further ado, let's jump into today's episode. Kate, welcome to this very special episode of the Australian Finance Podcast.
It is wonderful to be here, and we're recording in Sydney today.
Yeah, we're on the road. If you hear some bus noises, we don't have buses in the CBD in Melbourne, so that's something new for us. But we have a very, very special guest, Effie. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Hello, hello. Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah.
Big fan of your work too. So
well,
it's an honor to be on your podcast.
I don't know about that, Effie. I think we are batting out of our league today, and we're so grateful for you to be on the show. We're going to talk about your books. We're going to talk about money saving, mm-hmm. investing, what's going on in the economy. A bit about you as well. This is exciting stuff.
And so, how long have we got for all this?
Yes, we're going to fit that into. Okay, we're done. wonderful to have you on the show. And really appreciate you taking the time out. We had Evan on the show, who I know you know.
Yes.
He talked about money and relationships and psychology recently. So
and he's got his new book out, which I read, which was really amazing. Evan does a brilliant job on basically demystifying, some complex strategies and really making them very easy to understand. Obviously, I know Evan through InvestSmart as well.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And thank you to InvestSmart. You're an independent director helping us put today together. So I don't know where you want to start, Kate.
I think it'd be cool to talk a little bit about your journey, Effie, because you've been in the industry for a long time, and you started at a time where there weren't many women in finance, especially with a public face. And I was just wondering maybe if you have some early memories of your starting point in this industry.
Yeah, it's a good point you raise. It's so nice to see so many more females in this space like yourself. But you're right. I guess when I came into it, I didn't even think about, being a female, male, whatever. I just thought that I want to get this information out. I always knew I wanted to get into finance, always. I loved economics in year 10, and that was it. That was, my trajectory to get into there. But I ended up doing a Bachelor of Economics at UQ and then fell into banking. And I did that for quite a while, 6-7 years, was with a major bank, and I thought, this is it. I'm just going to get my gold watch and stay here. I didn't, thank goodness. Thank goodness. I remember seeing a job advertisement. It was in the paper, and it was for The Money Show back then. So Paul Clitheroe, you may know, the financial guru, godfather, that kind of really started it all, I think, was looking for a kind of senior researcher that knew finance. So it was a big call, because you leave the bank and it was secure. I was young. I thought this was where I was going to keep going in my career. And I remember, going to that job interview and Paul was basically saying, I'm going to, give you your best tip you've ever heard in finance. And I remember reading all these books before going to that interview. And I'm sitting there going, wow, well, I mean, what is this tip? And he basically said, look, Effie, it's not what you earn that counts, it's what you spend. And I'm thinking, that's such a basic but solid tip. It's not what you earn that counts, it's what you spend. And it kind of turned around on me because I ended up getting this job, but at half my salary.
That's what he was leading to.
Okay. He prepared me for that hook, line, and sinker I was in. But then that's where the passion started. And I guess I think my first break would have been on, I don't know if a lot of your listeners would know this show, but it was a midday show. Carrie Ann was running it. So I was talking about money back then on the Carrie Ann show. And now, did the money show and then started a magazine in 1999 the passion has always been to communicate, and I see myself as that, a communicator. I'm not a financial advisor. I live and breathe basically what I say, and basically financial empowerment for me is so, so important, especially for women. Coming from a background where my parents really struggled, coming from Greece as migrants and so on, money was a big issue. Yeah.
Were you? You mentioned there, like, you studied economics, and you're really passionate about that. And then Paul comes in and says, "Yeah, it's about saving money, basically." Yeah. And you said that you're surprised by that almost, because here we are in finance, in this industry, in these big towers, and we're taught all these complicated formulas. And then now your job is like, no, you just spend less and have intention with your money. Were you surprised at the disconnect between those two worlds?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if I had to look at, what was the one aspect I think that's ensured that I've continued to stay in this industry, because fundamentally I'm a communicator. It's communicating that information. Mm. It doesn't have to be hard. And I remember throughout my career I would probably be looked down a little bit upon, because it's like, oh, you're talking about don't spend much, save. Mm. That's such a basic thing. But it's the principle of everything. Get these basic money rules right, and the rest fall into place. And I think if you can communicate those elements to everybody in a format that people can understand, that's a success. That's amazing. That you can then jump on that and help someone out. But you're absolutely right. We can kind of get carried away with it all, and miss the point of everything. Mm-hmm. And the big problem that I see with a lot of people, we talk about FOMO, fear of missing out. But for me, it's all about fear of jumping in. Mm. I see a lot of people not doing something because they fear of jumping in. And all that comes down to is the power of knowledge. Get that right, and then you kind of demystify things and you can jump in.
Mm. I like it.
I like that, because so much of finance has seemed inaccessible for a long time. And we're talking about off air about how things like podcasts and TV, like the stuff you do every morning, really break down some of those barriers that have traditionally been there. And some of the work you've done with Money Magazine over the years, you must have seen Australians and money tips from all different directions.
Yeah, I think I've seen it pretty much all. It's no such thing as a new idea, I feel.
Yeah.
Just different way of saying it. But it is so good to see it on so many different platforms. And you're right, it's quite amazing. I think I was speaking to you before, Kate, that, I have the opportunity to be on, primetime breakfast show with wonderful people like Carl and Ali, and I'm talking about money. Who would have thought that they'd want someone on a breakfast show to talk about money? I mean, this morning I was talking about inflation, the Aussie dollar, what happens when it goes down? What does that mean? Well, people want to know what it means to them. Does it mean that I can buy a real cheap TV now? I should buy one now because the dollar's going to go up. So things like that, it's quite amazing that it is on that platform. But you're right, now we can get this information everywhere, and that's got to be good. But sometimes I think with consumers too, you can have too much and you can get a bit of, information paralysis maybe?
Yes, yeah. And I feel like you said before, like, your job is like as a communicator.
Yeah.
I feel like you used an example there. You just talked about inflation and TVs?
Yes.
It's TVs what people care about, but then they hear about this thing called inflation, which they're scared about. And to relate those two things is just like a gift, because you can introduce the money conversation with so many people, and that's really special.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I could sit there and just completely talk about, okay, if the Fed increases interest rates, then the gap between our rates and their rates, and then that will cause inflation to go up. Yeah, that's all well and good, but what does that mean for me? What does that mean for the average person? And you've got to bring it down, because that's when you get people interested. And that's when it matters to most people. And then, look, if we can get our individual affairs into a better place, then overall that's got to be better for the economy, doesn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love it. And after all your experience in the industry, at the end of the day, what does money mean to you now?
What does money, like the physical money,
mean to me? The concept.
For me, it does mean financial freedom, freedom, security. It means that I don't have to be driven by it. Instead, I can make decisions without worrying about it. And that financial wellness is so, so important. And unfortunately, I am seeing when you look at, you know, data, whose ever data you want to have a look at, that financial wellness is not there for a lot of Aussies. And I couldn't think of anything worse than being, you know, in that position where you can't sleep at night because financial matters are impacting you. And we are seeing this now.
Mm.
And for me, it doesn't mean that I'm the richest person. By no means. That's not going to happen. I know that. It just means I am the best financial version of myself. That doesn't have to factor in how I live my life. And that's on the side. So I guess money for me is a bit of security, bit of comfort that it does not consume me.
Mm.
I like that. And if someone is feeling financially stressed right now and maybe can't sleep, where would you start? Where would you recommend going?
Yeah, we're in interesting times, aren't we? Mm. Gee, oh, just doesn't stop. It feels like it doesn't stop. Maybe because I'm in the news cycle and it might be a little bit
there's
worse.
There's always
then.
Something.
There's always something. My kids think I'm living at the end of the world or something. look, the good thing is that if you are feeling financially stressed, there are things you can do. And the first thing is to put your hands up and get help.
Yeah.
You can't just be sitting there getting this in your head. And I always talk about voices in our head because we do have our voices in our head when it comes to money matters. We do ask ourselves a lot of questions. The good news is there is so much help out there, but it's a matter of where to get it.
Mm.
And in a lot of cases, it could be a situation of just take a deep breath and have a look at your affairs. And often that goes back to the basic 101. It's what's keeping you up at night. Maybe jot that down. Okay, so where is my money going? What can I do to bring it back in? And in cases where you can't even get to that level, I'd be calling just the National Debt Helpline, you know, 1-800-007-007. Ring them because they do such a brilliant job, financial counsellors. So they're not financial advisors. They're not selling you anything. There is no shame. And there is just so many options that they can direct you to. Is energy crisis keeping you up? Is it that you just can't afford to be paying your mortgage repayments now? Whatever your concern is, there is an avenue to get some help. And I have done a bit of work even with CanStar on looking at the cost of living because it's such a big issue right now. And even for you know, young people coming through to juggle saving for a deposit or their cost of living and so on, often it's our regular household bills that are weighing us down. Yeah. And just looking at some analysis of, you know, what is the average amount we're paying, what's the cheapest or best in the market, a household could save easily around $13,000 a year just there by swapping things around. Unfortunately, when it comes to our expenses, a lot of us just autopilot.
Mm.
It just comes out, it pays. And I think, if anything, the pandemic has finally got a lot of people to say, oh, my goodness, I really need to take control of my affairs.
This is really important right now, as you just mentioned, you know, inflation, energy prices, the fuel bill, everything's going up. We're fortunate here in Australia, actually, compared to around the world. Like, you look at England.
Yeah.
That's really scary over there.
Yeah.
You talk a lot about debt in the book, obviously.
Yeah.
And that's something that we know. We have a lot of folks that write into us, and credit cards, payday loans, buy now, pay later. I guess a lot of people feel almost like exhausted and just at their wit's end a lot of the time. And now with interest rates going up, it's probably even scarier for them.
Yeah.
Are the things that, like we briefly joked about this, but there are some things that kind of don't change. You just say it in a different way. And that, I feel like that relates like kind of the logical to the emotional. At a time right now, are there if people wanted to take some action today, are there anything that you could leave us with?
Mm-hmm. So those of us that are in a lot of debt, is that what your point? Yeah.
Is it go to the debt helpline first, or are there things I can do now?
Look, you can obviously call them. I mean, in most cases, let's say you're a homeowner. We were chatting about this before. You know, someone on a $500,000 mortgage, by the time Christmas comes, they're probably looking at their repayments jumped by about $1,000 more since the first rate hike.
Which is very scary.
It is very scary. Mm-hmm. Now, you've got the haves and the have-nots. Those that have got a buffer in their home loan, they're probably older customers in the sense they've had their loan longer, I mean, that way. And they may be able to have a cushion there. Or you have others that have just got it and they've got to find that $1,000. Either which way, it's a change in behaviour. Even if you've got the money, you've still got to find that extra $1,000 somewhere. Maybe it's less dinners for you out. Maybe it's less holidays or whatever the case may be. It's a shift in your behaviour. And that's hard to do. So I think what we'll probably see now is a lot of people, you know, unfortunately, in that case, there's some quick fixes. If you're a new home loan customer, unfortunately, new deals, the best deals go to new customers. You're seeing almost a 0.5% difference in interest rate there for existing customers versus new customers. So it is a case of actively asking your lender, you got a better deal for new customers. What can you do for me? If they're not going to do anything, can you refinance? A lot of people can't refinance. They're what we call mortgage prisoners. So if you look at property data, we've seen even Sydney here where I live, probably in the last quarter, it's fallen down by about 6% property prices. So you might find that if you borrowed heavily, you're still stuck in that situation. If that's the case, I'd be looking at, okay, what other debts around me? What can I do? Me personally, I love the snowball method. And a lot of people probably heard that. It's just psychologically, it works a lot easier. If you can list your debts down from smallest to highest, then focus just on the smallest, put everything else on minimum, bare minimum repayments. Then you've got all that surplus repayments, channel it, attack it to the smallest loan, knock that off. Oh, the satisfaction of ticking that off.
Absolutely.
Done. Move to the next of the list, keep doing it. And then even in between there, you can speed that up by looking at, okay, I can't refinance my home loan. I'm stuck here, but I've got these other debts. Maybe I can refinance my credit card to a cheaper one. Maybe I can refinance my car loan or whatever just to help you along the lines. But you've got to do it. No one's going to do it for you. You have to make the first move.
I like it.
Yeah, and that's the challenge because it is easy to bury your head in the sand with these matters and because it just seems so hard and so overwhelming. One of the things I really liked in your Girl's Guide to Money, which I know you're coming out with a new edition early next year, which is exciting because that came out pre-COVID, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And it's obviously hit a market, which I'm so happy. And updating it was an interesting experience because I felt like, the information still stands, which I hope it would.
Yeah.
But a lot has changed too. So that's just kind of gone to the printers now and should be out next year, January. The fundamental strategies are still there.
Yep. And I know you had some really cool money challenges at the end and they were just something small and simple that you could do every week. So instead of trying to read the book and go, I need to implement everything immediately to fix my finances, you could just do one thing a week. And I was wondering if you could share some of those money saving challenges with us.
Yeah, I think, and we were talking about people but bite-sized information. Yeah. And we want things now, don't we?
Quick fix, please.
Yeah. So I'm hoping this will be a quick fix in a sense that you can take control. It's kind of like a money bingo. Open it. It's at the back. There's a tip there. You can pick whichever one you want. It can take a whole day to do it. You can take a whole week to do it. Once you've done it, cross it off. That satisfaction of crossing them all out. And it is kind of little tips. Like it could be as simple as delete one app. Delete one app, you know, have a look at your phone. Mm. What's on there? Have you got Uber Eats? Have you got maybe, you know, a ride sharing app? You know, what's on your phone that may be costing you money? So it could be as simple as delete one app. Have you got a credit card? Okay, call your bank and reduce the limit by half immediately. I'm not telling you to go cold turkey. I'm just telling you reduce that limit. If you reduce the limit, it reduces your liability. So little tips like that. A lot of us may be going back to work. So all those great habits you've done. I mean, think about if you've worked at home, you probably haven't bought your lunch in the last year or two. So the idea is then, you know, maybe set up an account every time you bring your lunch to work. Transfer $15 straight into an online saver. Do that every time you bring your lunch to work and you'll see just how much that goes up. It could be a little bit more detailed involved, like, you know, give your super a health check. These are the four things you need to look at: your performance, your fees, your insurance, your asset class. Now, that may take a little bit longer, but at least it gives you something to focus on for that week, or maybe you need 2 weeks, but you can do it in your own time. So, yeah, I hope that kind of inspires people to flick through and just see, well, which challenge am I going to do today?
Yeah, I like that. And people do like a challenge and something they can tick off. I know that helps a lot with me when saving goals. I actually write out the installments that I want to get to as I'm working towards the goal and actually physically crossing them off, which you would think is so non-technological, but it actually works better.
Well, and that's like rule 101, isn't it? What's your goal? Where do you want to get to? And often if you can visualize that too, I often have little post notes and put them on there. And some of my goals for the year are really easy, like I can tell you. For me, one was just set up a BPAY to put money into my super. So for someone my age,
simple.
It's simple. It's a no-brainer. You know, the tax incentives, where I am at my life, it's crazy not to actually do. I mean, I have been making non-concessional contributions for a long time, but setting it up as a BPAY, for me, it's kind of a win-win situation. You look at your bank account, you may have like 10 bucks in there. You think, oh, it's a hassle to transfer it. You BPAY, you press the button, bang, it's in your super automatically. And I do silly things too, like a, you know, it could be the Coke bottle challenge. That could be it. I'm going to do that this year. But I visualize it. So I'll put a picture on my desk and there it is.
I like it. If you can combine the visualization, it's super powerful, but also the feedback loops, which is what you're referring to with the snowball earlier on. It's the feedback loops, is shortening them. I think a lot of people, like, we see this with dieting, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people are like, yeah, get healthy. And you're like, oh, okay. Yeah. I would love to do that. I'm going to start today. And then you're like, well, where do I start?
Yeah.
We'll start with maybe just cutting out one thing and it, just chipping away at it, I feel like that's more powerful than kind of this overwhelming thing, like I'm just going to save more money.
Yeah, and it's why I guess our New Year's resolutions don't work, because it's just like, oh, I'm going to be better with money. What does that mean?
Yeah,
you actually have to break it down and give yourself something that's achievable to not overshoot write it down, visualize it, and you'll be able to stick to it. It's all breaking that, you know, breaking things down.
Mm.
And often people, when people say they want to be better at money, one of the first things they want to try and target is their budgeting.
Yeah.
I know we've had listeners write in before and like, oh, I've tried a lot of different budgeting methods, but I still can't really figure out what works because my expenses and change every month. Do you have any strategies there?
With budgeting?
Yeah.
Budgeting's so personal, isn't it? I can get yelled for this.
Yeah.
For me, it's I look at my budget twice a year because a budget is never set in stone. It changes. It's got to move with you. And I just do the good old Excel spreadsheet. I'm an old-fashioned
type
of girl.
You're like me. Yeah, I like it too, yeah.
Yeah, because there's lots of apps out there. I'm surprised you didn't.
No. I'm simple spreadsheet.
He loves spreadsheets.
I'm the same. Kate, do you prefer an app or do you?
I just use the app. I'm kind of. The way I do it is I'm like, this is how much I want to save and invest every month. Yeah. And if I can do that, then I don't really mind what happens with the rest. This can happen.
Yeah. I met a guy that had 27 sub-accounts. So, you know, his savings accounts, 27. Okay. I mean, in this day and age, you don't pay fees on bank accounts, so you can do that. It just goes to show how fine he broke his budgeting down. So I do an Excel spreadsheet, basically. And the beauty about everything being digital now, we've got a digital footprint. You only need to have a look at someone's budget to really understand how they value money. And then I highlight things that just keep going out. I highlight basically regular costs in one color. Then I highlight discretionary spending in another. Do that and that will be quite an eye-opener because it's discretionary spending that really kills a budget. So from there, what I do is the household bills, I do that check. do that twice a year. Am I still on the best possible deal? Your phone plans change. I may not need as many gigabytes. Things move. Things change. So I detox my finances there, clean that up. And then the other one, it's a great reminder of this discretionary spending. I then set up buckets. I name the buckets because once you put them as a personal thing, I'm really not going to take money out of, say, my daughter's account. Poor Nikki. I can't take money out from there. So, you know, I've named them, made them personal.
Yeah.
For me, a perfect budget is when my income comes in, it gets dispersed completely out. There's nothing in that transaction account left. And, you know, I pay myself first. It is a bill. And we talked about forced savings as well. I know InvestSmart, and I thought it's a very clever product in the sense it's playing on the theme of buy now, pay later. This is invest now, fund later. I've actually invested in that myself because I want to get a feel for it, real feel for it, because I love the concept. The thing is, a lot of us don't save, but we're great at paying debt. So, you know, in this case, turn it into a debt. And then you pay it off, and you know the way it works. Obviously, you only need to put $4,000 down to get a $10,000 investment. It's not for everyone, but it's that forced saving. So for me, I pay myself, I automate everything, and it just happens.
You sound like a hybrid of Kate and I. Kate's massive advocate for automating, which we both are, but I also did exactly the same thing, and I'm like, I found someone that does it too, which is the spreadsheet or like a bank statement and highlighting. I typically only do it for all of the big expenses at tax time because I've got to get it right, like for accounting and for the tax agent. So I go through, and if this is a fuel cost, or if this is a subscription, and this is this, and then I identify, it's kind of like the retrospective budget, because that's a realistic, you said it, like look at someone's bank account and it kind of reflects how they value money.
Yeah, yeah.
That's such a powerful phrase because it does, right?
We can all say. I think it's an actual quote. Was it an actual quote by President?
Don't tell me what you value. Show me where you spend your money. Yeah, I'll
better
tell
not
you
take
what you
credit for that one.
Oh, no, this is yours. Let's own it. No,
it's definitely not
loosely inspired.
Yeah.
But no, it's true, right? Like I speak to a lot of financial planners, and they say the retrospective budget, looking backwards, is the one that we use.
Well, you've got to look backwards in order to move forwards. That's what I absolutely agree with that. Where has my money gone? How can I be better at it? I'm glad I'm a kind of combination of both of you.
It's great. One of the things, Effie, that we get a lot of questions on, and something that we probably don't have good enough answers to, if I'm being candid, is the relationships and money conversation. We've got a lot of people from 30 to 45, and this is a really interesting time for a lot of people because, and even younger, we have a lot of people in their 20s, but predominantly 30s, and they, you know, they want to have a family, they're thinking about long-term goals and things like this, and the question is, how do we deal with money?
Yeah.
How do you deal with money if you're in a relationship?
Yeah. I'm going to ask you guys first, how do you deal with money?
Well, my wife and I, we have always been a team, if that makes sense. So we met when we were, I think I was 17, she was 16. So for us, it was always together.
Yeah.
You go through uni or school, you don't have that much money, so you work together. But the more I've spoken to people, the more I realize that may not, in fact, it doesn't work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's what I've come up with.
Yeah. I mean, I find it fascinating just talking to all my friends about how they deal with it, because everyone is so different and every friend approaches it differently and has different conversations, and even the questions they talk about are different.
Mm. Yeah, and I actually have a chapter around this, and I have spoken to behavioral economists around as well, and I'm personally interested because firsthand I went through this when I got married. It's interesting. We have different money personalities. So let's establish that first of all. You know, putting it really simply, about five, you know. Obviously, you can be a combination of them and so on. And I've put together these kind of five money personalities. Some I've called, you know, new ones, like a sloth is someone who's, you know. Sloths are beautiful creatures, but they're very slow because they're burdened with debt.
No.
So if you can relate to that, then I call you basically a sloth. You've got a peacock as well. And, you know, peacocks are beautiful. They bring the feathers out, and that's to attract people. And that happens with spending too. And I can relate to myself as a peacock, because I'm one of those people that if we go out to a pub for a drink, I guarantee I'm the first to say, I'll shout everyone. And then I think, oh, why did I say that?
Yeah. Everyone's like, okay.
Because I have a bit of a peacock syndrome maybe. But I'm also an owl as well. So I can invest as well. And I look at my super, which is not probably healthy, once a week. I look at my investments, how they're tracking once a week. It's not good. Let me tell you, when the market's falling and this volatility, it's not good to do that. So I can see different kind of personalities there. My husband, different again. We cross over in some areas. Obviously, there is an attraction there that we had.
That's good.
Money mustn't have been it. Because we are very, very different. And I learned very early in my relationship that, well, we're going to keep things separate. Mm. Someone who in my job, in my field, you can expect I like to pay things on time. I'm very anal. Mm-hmm. Things have got to be done right.
Part of the brand.
Part of the brand, absolutely, Kate. Self-employed person, their cash flow, they're completely complaining all the time about, oh, I haven't been paid or the cash flow is not coming and so on. So, you know, they don't have the luxury of a boss kind of paying you regularly each week and so on. So we clashed. Mm. We clashed like no tomorrow. And I did the one thing that I've always written about that I would never suggest you do. Put them on your card. I had a credit card back then as the additional card holder. No way, no way, no way, no way. Cut them off so fast and then basically set the rules that what are our goals? We need to achieve that. We need to be united in that. But as far as accounts and what you do, then we're separate. And we're also different investment styles. He's more property and I'm more shares, ETFs, and loving my super. Mm. So it kind of works well. So long as we stay together. We don't stay together. It's going to be a bit of a mess, isn't it? I'm going to be very equities heavy and he's going to be very properties heavy.
Yeah. No, it's just interesting hearing about how people do it so differently. And I know you've got some questions that people could potentially use on a date night when they want to talk about money for the first time.
It is interesting, isn't it? Imagine going on a date and asking, hey, what's your credit score?
Yeah. Probably wouldn't ask that one.
But you can find out a lot about a person even indirectly too.
Yeah.
Look, my husband and I early on, had fun doing a money quiz online. And, you can do that, that's a sneaky way of finding out what they might be like, and some questions like, hey, hun, if you won $1 million, what would you do with it? So if they say, I would buy a Ferrari and then I'd go out on holidays, alarm bells may have to ring.
Yep.
So there are ways of approaching conversations. And I think the important thing is that you do find what works in your relationship because, again, that can prevent you, obviously. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys this. It prevents you from what you want to achieve. Your financial wellness can be, sacrificed here. I think as long as you do talk about it, how you go about it, it can be very different for each couple.
I think talking about it is really important.
Yeah.
I think if we take the other side of the ledger, financial abuse is a real problem as well. And so communication there is probably the gateway to getting rid of that in your life. And if you can't communicate with the person, that does make it challenging.
It does. And also, if I guess for my generation and even older, what I have seen is a lot of financial abuse of that, or a situation where, especially for women, they weren't involved in the household finances and through a separation or that control, financial abuse, if we're talking, that can come in many forms and can be hard to recognize, and it's absolutely awful. And a lot of women find getting out of that and then realizing I don't know where to start. And again, there is professional help that can be done, but it's so important that women these days do get involved with their financial matters, even if they're not earning an income. If one person is the primary carer, then that person still needs to be involved in that income. And I do suggest, even as a payment, in that case, that maybe paid a budget that they can manage or use at their discretion. So again, they have that, we're talking about autonomy, that control.
Yeah, I think that's really important, because it also means that if you are in a situation, you do have some control over some money, it's also liberating, because you feel like, I'm in a bad situation, but I've got a couple of $1,000 here. If I need to use that, I can. And that's just really powerful, that first couple of $1,000.
Yeah.
And we talk about Aussies not having, a lot of Aussies not having even $2,000 in an emergency fund.
Yeah.
that first $2,000 is, it's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And in relationships that applies, I think, too.
Yeah.
And I would encourage anyone that's in that situation, seek professional help, but also pick up the book. Listen to what Effie's saying here around communication. Maybe that's a telltale sign.
Yeah. I actually did do a podcast. I've dabbled a little bit in it, and actually financial abuse was one where I had, a wonderful lady come on and basically give firsthand account of what can be like. And it is a case where I think all women should at least listen to something like that to prevent it from themselves.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Kate, let's talk about something optimistic.
Yes. So if someone's listening and they've been thinking about investing for a long period of time and they've just sat on the fence, maybe for a couple of years now, they started getting interested during COVID, but they're held back by something. Maybe they feel like they just need to know a bit more.
Yeah.
Or they don't think they have enough money to get started. How would you go about tackling some of those beliefs?
Yeah, and it's an interesting time to be investing because it's so volatile, but I think you need to put that out and go back to, okay, what's the goal? What are you trying to achieve and why are you doing it? And there were so many first-time investors that went into the market, I think like 500,000 or something like that with statistics.
Yep.
You probably know that better than I do.
Yep.
And they dabbled in there for a number of reasons. We looked at like the cash rate was. I mean, it's improving a little bit. I can find you an account now that pays 4%. Okay, that may sound exciting, but still at the end of the day, that money is going backwards. I've always been a great believer. I think my first foray into the share market, I was, 18, 19, and I really didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, sometimes ignorance is bliss. But I did know that, you know what, money in this bank account is not going to earn anything. I might as well own the bank. So hence why I bought bank shares.
Hmm.
I also worked for a bank, so it just seemed like a no-brainer. And I think people going in now, the beauty about when I was investing versus now, you actually don't need that much to invest. And you don't have to do all the thinking if you don't want to. You know, you could, I mean, obviously $2,000 would probably be the recommended amount to get into the share market. But then you could, you know, you don't have that diversification with just one stock. What are you going to buy with just one? You'll have to, you know, take some time. You've got to jump in to know what you're doing. There is the beauty now of ETFs that you can get into that track and index. I mean, I love seeing if you're not quite sure what they are, think of it like a shopping basket and it tracks like a benchmark. And let's say it's you're looking at the ASX 200, the 200 top stocks there. And then they put the products, the businesses in there. So they'll have CSL in the shopping basket. They might put Telstra in the shopping basket. And off they walk around with all these companies. They're going to charge you a little bit of a fee for that. And then they'll rebalance that. And so you can either do that directly through the providers, go through robo-advisors like InvestSmart. There are lots of options. And I think, again, going back to that knowledge is key. Even something getting onto the government's website, moneysmart.gov.au, has some great information around investing and exchange-traded funds. I think with all the noise what we're going to have, yeah, there is going to be volatility. There will be continue to be volatility. Australia will probably fare a little bit better, our markets. But then if we've got this global recession as we're talking about, that's going to impact on Australia as well. Companies won't be buying as much. A demand for our products, that then filters down to companies. It's all kind of logical when you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you are investing, you're investing in a company that you expect will do well. Well, why will it do well? What's it selling? Are people going to buy more of it? What are the outside implications that could impact it? So go direct, you have to think about all that. Indirect through like an ETF or robo-advisor to set these portfolios up, you don't need to think as much. But, you know, the beauty about this is that, you know, you've got time on your hands. Not about, you know, time in the market. It's time in the market rather than time in the market. There's another saying that's not mine. So you can, an asset's only bad if you have to sell it. And then if you can ride out the volatility, hopefully if you bought well, you'll end up well. And I think the option is then, you know, the foregone loss of not being in the market. That's what you got to think about. Your humble bank account will only do so much. It's not going to do a lot of the heavy lifting. The heavy lifting is going to go into investing. I think one thing that I read that really changed my mindset is I think JP Morgan did something a little while ago. It was a long time ago that basically showed someone who invested for just 10 years then stopped would be better off than someone who did it for like 25 or 30 years because of the magic of compound interest. So the number one rule here is if you can save little but saved often, you're jumping in at different price points. You got your dollar cost averaging. It's a nice way to build up your wealth.
I like it. Sensible, long term.
Yeah, well, I don't have that much time left, so maybe.
Now, a lot of our listeners, you know, even some of our older listeners who are, you know, approaching retirement.
Yeah.
They often ask questions like, oh, you know, I don't have that long thing in retirement. But the thing is, even once you hit retirement, you then got 20, sometimes 30 years, you know?
Yeah.
It's still a long time.
That's a really good point, Owen, because, and especially now with the volatility too, they're thinking, oh, gee, I'm retiring. The market's down. My pension fund's gone down too. Well, the good news is obviously the government has reduced the minimum drawdowns that you take out. But you're right. You want to retire at 70, you've still got, you know, 20 years plus. If you're not sure, there is a longevity calculator that you can do to work out when you will die. I suggest you try that. I've done that myself.
Yep. I've heard of people having a, sounds really grotesque, but a death clock on their table to remind them to make the most of life.
Yeah, you know.
It's ticking down.
So. There is a death clock. Yeah. There's a debt clock as well if you want to check out that. That ticks up.
Here we go again.
Oh, is that the one with the global debt?
Yes,
a global debt. A bit terrifying.
Yeah. You can just sit and watch it for hours, can't you? But going back to that, yeah, it is a case that you do have time. And look, again, the share market right now has put some huge volatility on your super fund. It is a case probably best not to look at it at the moment and continue your path of what you're doing. I mean, if you're going to swap your asset classes there, you're going to crystallize some losses. So maybe get some expert advice if you're right in retirement for that one.
Yeah, for sure.
Effie, if you could go back, and it sounds like your 18-year-old self was kind of switched on if you started investing in shares at that age, but what would you tell your 18-year-old self about money if you could go back?
Do you know, I have actually put this down on paper and I do want to read you this because, is that
please
okay?
Yeah, let's do it.
Because I sent it to my daughter, or I gave it to my daughter, so she's had this and I thought, what better way for her to really understand what her mum was like at 18? Okay, so basically I said to her, you know, Nikki, your first job out of uni will probably pay you well. For me, I should have taken the advice of that financial planner back then when they said salary sacrifice into super. That was the first thing they came out to me when I got my job at Westpac. They had a financial planner, funny that, to come out. And I said, no way, I don't need to do that. I wish I did it back then because being younger, sacrificing a little bit is not much pain. You can handle it. I can't handle sacrifice now at this age. And then I said to myself, look, you're going to thank yourself in your 50s for starting so early. Don't be afraid to take on more risks. Take on more risks with your investments now. You're only 20. Your best lessons will be learnt from your failures. Okay, you've got no debts right now. You've got no kids. You've got no commitments. Go for it. Watch out what you're spending. Apply the 48-hour rule. Wish I did that when I was 18. If you want something, hold off. If you want it after 48 hours, go for it. Chances are you probably won't. Discretionary spending is the biggest killer. And finally, don't put so much pressure on yourself. Balance is, I don't know if I can say this word, bullshit.
Yeah, of course.
I want to say that because especially with a lot of women too, juggling so many balls, balance is bullshit. Women place too much pressure on themselves. Prioritize what you want and never regret your decisions. And don't worry so much. Your worries aren't that important. And then finally, I'd say, relax on the Silhouette hairspray. Most of my 20s were lived with gravity-defying hairstyles. So,
I love that. And I think, like for me, not putting so much pressure on yourself with sorting out your career. Like in your 20s, you feel like you have to have it all figured out. And especially with your finances, it can feel so overwhelming. There's just, like we've talked about many things like budgeting, super, talking about it in your relationships. And if you try and do that all at once, you'll end up probably not doing anything and just becoming paralyzed. So take a bit of pressure off and just do one thing a week. If you can just tick one money challenge off a week, whether it's doing the bingo challenge or just listening to one podcast episode, it just makes it a little bit less overwhelming.
Yeah, so I couldn't have said it better myself, Kate. It is. I think we do put too much pressure. We want so much. We always think the grass is greener on the other side. And look, chances are it's probably fake. So it's important to, you know, stay calm and tackle one thing at a time.
And you've got time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just got to get started.
You do.
Effie, there's obviously you're a wealth of knowledge, and obviously it's our treat to have you here today, but you've got books. I can see just here on your profile, you've got so many different like social outlets as well. People can find you on TV. You've got a new, like the revised book, is it January 2022?
23.
Sorry, yeah.
We've passed that.
Yeah.
A Real Girl's Guide to Money.
A Real Girl's Guide to Money. And you said that the principles are largely the same, but it's a new book. We would encourage all listeners to check it out, please. And it's not the only book.
No, and look, I don't even care if you don't even get the book. I'll be honest with you. I just want you to be a better financial version of yourself. There's nothing more empowering than that. So even get onto free sites like themoneysmart.gov.au and give yourself one challenge and try and stick to that. And go for it.
Yep.
I love it. Effie, as someone who has lived and breathed personal finance and actually helping Australians for the last three decades, thank you so much for everything
you've
done.
Thanks, Owen.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming on the show today.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Australian Finance Podcast, where our mission is to improve the financial futures of all Australians. If you'd like to learn more, create a free account at rusk.com.au/account to download free episode workbooks, bonus resources, and take our amazing free personal finance courses.
You can also join our online community by following the link in the description. If you enjoyed the show, what we'd love is for you to leave us a snappy review on iTunes. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Rask Australia. Kate and I are also on both of those channels. Finally, if you have any feedback, suggestions for episodes or guests to come on the show, or you just have a question for us, shoot us an email at podcasts@rask.com.au. InvestSmart's portfolios are turning 10, and to celebrate, 10 InvestSmart boot camps are up for grabs. This self-paced online course is ideal for both seasoned investors and those who are just starting out. Valued at $99, you could win a spot on this highly rated course. To enter the competition and for terms and conditions, simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Don't miss out on this chance to learn from experts and take your investing to the next level. Simply visit investsmart.com.au/win. Good luck. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Before you go, I wanted to share some things with you. Specifically, I wanted to tell you about the 10 ways that Rask could help you in 2024. As many of you know, Rask has grown to become one of the biggest investing and finance platforms in Australia. Across our podcasts, our websites, our memberships, and so on, we now engage around 200,000 Aussies. Which, considering we started in a humble lounge room on a Kmart desk, one of those old fake white wooden ones, I'm pretty ecstatic about where we are 6 years later. As part of becoming one of Australia's biggest platforms for wealth creation and preservation, we now have a very special position in the country in that we can bring you some of the best, most thoughtful, expert-driven ways to protect and grow your wealth. And I'm going to share some of those with you now. I've got 10 ways that we can potentially help you or match you with someone who can. The first thing that I want to tell you about is the biggest step we've ever taken at Rask, which is the launch of our Rask Invest platform. This is a platform that lets our team, led by me, invest for you, primarily through low-cost, diversified ETFs. We'll have three strategies at launch, and every investor who comes through can pick one of the three strategies, being a balanced strategy, a growth strategy, and a high growth strategy. The balanced strategy focuses on passive income, and the high growth strategy focuses on longer term compounding. You will find a link in your podcast player to register your interest. We will be taking off soon. Number two, if you prefer to DIY your investing, you can join me and over 4,000 members inside Rask Core. That's our full ETF and ASX share research membership community. You can join now and you'll get updated ETF portfolio recommendations every quarter, as well as ongoing ASX and global stock research. Every single month, we call them the All-Star Stocks. You get that alongside the ETF portfolios, as well as other members-only content. It's called Rask Core. Number three, our first ever partnership
with a business other than our own was a business by the name of Blusk, which has since become Flint Group. Flint Group is led by Chris Bates and Christian Stevens, two of Australia's most highly regarded mortgage brokers. Already over 200 RASC community members have begun the RASC plus Flint Group mortgage broking process. You can click the link in your podcast player if you're refinancing, investing, a first home buyer, or whatever. You've probably heard Chris on the show many times. Number four, you can connect with our most trusted financial advisors. Whether you're 25 years old, just graduated uni and looking to set yourself up, or approaching or in retirement and you've got that nest egg you want to protect and generate a passive income from, you can get in contact with our trusted panel of financial advisors. You can find the link in your podcast player. It's there each and every week. Just click the thing that says financial planning. Number five, if you want specialist insurance advice, as Warren Buffett said, rule number one is don't lose money. And rule number two is don't forget rule number one. Insurance is vitally important, especially when it comes to your number one asset, you. Whether you're a single income household or a couple, and you just want to protect what would happen if. You want to protect your family if something goes wrong. You want to protect your spouse if you lose your job. You want to protect yourself if you hurt yourself on the weekend at footy. Insurance is a way to do that. And I think the best way to do insurance is through a financial planner. And there's a few reasons for that. But one of them is sometimes some insurers will only work with financial advisors, but they can also be your companion as you go through the sometimes daunting process of getting insurance done properly. Sometimes you might not even know, but you're not even covered, even though you think you are. So get the right advice. You'll find a link in the show notes to check that out. Number six, buying property. If you're like me and you're thinking of buying property in the next 12 months, or maybe you've already invested and you're looking to downsize, getting the right advice and being able to build wealth through property is a proven strategy. It might be one of the most contentious, but I think that we have one of Australia's best property coaches in our ranks. That is Pete Wargent. Pete is the host of the now super popular Australian property podcast by RASC, and he's also my analyst team's macro consultant. So if you're a member of RASC Core, you will have seen Pete's name around the traps. He's a property coach and buyer's agent, and he works with a select number of people each and every year. Just a note on this. This is not a commercial thing with Pete. Pete just has great services, so we offer them to the community. And when he fills up, he fills up. You can find out more about Pete's coaching in the show notes. Next up, tracking your portfolio for tax. I think you are, because I think you have to. So we've partnered with Nevexa to help you manage your share and ETF reporting, whether it's tax or performance. All RASC users get 20% off an annual plan with Nevexa. You can sync your portfolio with Nevexa's software and it automatically tracks your dividends, your capital gains tax, and more. Again, not a commercial partnership. We don't make anything from working with Nevexa, but they do create some great tools which the RASC community uses each and every day. Number eight, want to run your own business? Maybe you already do. If you want more profit, but less stress, less time consumed, and less energy lost, get in contact. We have a partner business called Inflection. The Inflection Accelerator Program is a complete online course that helps you and a community of members engage and follow a proven strategy for growing your business. I'm grateful to be one of the coaches inside the Accelerator program, helping business owners right across Australia. You can find more following the link in your podcast player. It's the one that says coaching. Number nine, if you haven't already checked it out, join over 20,000 other people who tune into the RASC YouTube channel. It is completely free and you get notified when we go live and when we publish podcast episodes. There is a podcast on the RASC network each and every day, as well as bite-sized material that's less than 60 seconds, or those really punchy tutorials and webinars that are just 15 minutes that take you through a really exciting topic, whether it's how to buy a property, whether it's how to pick a dividend ETF. Some of our most popular content actually just explains things like, what the heck is franking credits and how do I calculate if I've got some? That's on our YouTube channel. Number 10, if you want to be a better investor, a saver, a better partner with money, or just understand your own relationship with money, you can do that. All of that by going to the RASC Education website and taking a free course. We've enrolled over 26,000 students at the time of this recording, and we're on a mission to get to 100,000 in the next few years. RASC Education is our mostly free education platform, covering everything from budgeting and automation to the probably, I would say, the best value investing program in the country. So whether you're a value investor, an intermediate investor, you want to know how to value Woolworths shares, or you simply just want to understand what ethical investing is, or buy your first property and what actually happens on settlement day, head to the RASC Education website and enroll in something today. It is free and it supports us, because then I can come on here next month and I can say we've got 27,000. And hopefully we reach critical mass where we can help more Australians manage their money better. Thank you for listening to this long-winded ad. If you want to get in contact with me, you know where to go. There's a link in your show notes. Basically, these 10 services, even though some of them we don't make any money from, support RASC and allow us to produce these podcasts, attract the biggest and best guests from Australia and around the world, and bring them to you to answer your questions. Thank you for being part of the RASC network, and thank you for your ongoing support. Bye for now.